The views and opinions expressed on this show or any other show on Hornco Radio Network are not necessarily those reflective of Hornco Radio owners, affiliates, or local sponsors. Any hurt feelings or mixed emotions infringing upon the PC movement should be referred to Hornco's Human Services Department, which can be reached at blah, 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 so which time you will be told to shut it. On behalf of Hornco Radio Network,
I would like to take this time now to thank you from the bottom of our blackened souls. Thank you!
Ah, it is so good to see you again, sir. I see you have brought your friends with you this time. Very good, sir. Would you like your usual table? Right this way then, sir. Please follow me.
Who are we kidding? We're not that stuffy.
I knew I was being threatened. Do you think it's worth holding out? I mean, I've heard some pretty ugly things about those guys. Ugly stories. Watch them
bleed. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Politics Cafe, where we sit down and discuss anything and everything. No holds barred. Bring any topic to the table. We don't care. We'll discuss it. Come on in. Sit down. Take a load off. Now, the host of the show, Mark.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and fellow conversationalists around the world, and welcome once again to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com, the best in internet talk radio. The Politics Cafe is a small cafe located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway, where we get together once a week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. We have a plenty tonight, folks. I'll tell you, the opener tonight, the opening story is one, I hope you ate dinner a while ago and you fully digested it, because this one is not pretty. You know, we have heard a lot of rumors, a lot of things going on around the internet that somehow or another the Democrats are going to try to hold up elections when it comes time for the president. That somehow or another they're going to figure out a way to do this. And of course, you know, we're all taking this as nonsense. You know, the electoral system in this country, the electoral college, is pretty much a carved in stone deal. I mean, let's face it, it's in the Constitution. The Constitution being the supreme law of the land, we have got a pretty much ironclad method of doing this. Well, believe it or not, folks, they have wormed their way around it and figured out exactly how to go about it. How to completely and totally negate your vote. And Massachusetts has started it off. I can't say really actually started it off, because they're claiming others are going along with them. But this is down off of the Boston Globe, and it came down last week. Now, this was brought to my attention when I read the... I actually had to do some cleaning this weekend, so I picked up the local newspaper. And of course, I use it for whatever. I rarely read it, but of course, you know, I get in and read the letters to the editor, the editorials and whatnot, some of the news, and bope through. But one of the letters to the editor that was written by one of our state representatives clued me into this. So I went digging around and found this at BostonGlobe.com. At BostonGlobe.com. All right. Now, only one final vote remains in the state Senate before the legislature sends a new law to the governor's desk that is intended to bypass the electoral college system and ensure that the winner of the presidential election is determined by the national popular vote. The House enacted the National Popular Vote Bill Tuesday. The national popular vote measure will ensure that our presidential elections reflect the true will of the people. And there's some scary words right there, folks. Speaker DeLeo is pleased that the House has enacted this measure to give each voter equal say in the election of our president. House Speaker Robert DeLeo's office said in a statement, "Only an enactment vote in the Senate is needed before the bill will be sent to the governor's desk." David Falcone, a spokesman for the Senate President Therese Murray, said it wasn't clear when the Senate would hold the final vote. Now, under the proposed law, all 12 of the state's electoral votes would be awarded to the candidate who receives the most votes nationally. Supporters are waging a state-by-state campaign to try to get such bills enacted. Once states possessing a majority of the electoral votes, or 270 of the 538, have enacted laws, the candidate winning the most votes nationally would be assured a majority of the Electoral College votes, no matter how the other states vote and how their electoral votes are distributed. Illinois, New Jersey, Hawaii, Maryland, and Washington have already adopted the legislation, according to the National Popular Vote Campaign's website. Supporters of the change say that the current Electoral College system is confusing and causes candidates to focus unduly only on a handful of battleground states. Critics say the current system is not broken. They also point to the disturbing scenario that candidate X wins nationally, but candidate Y has won in Massachusetts. In that case, all of the state's 12 electoral votes would go to candidate X, the candidate who was not supported by Massachusetts voters. The measure passed both branches of the legislature in 2008, but did not make it all the way through the process. Now, folks, you just gotta love it. I mean, you just gotta love it. Here it is, you know what I mean? Illinois, New Jersey, Hawaii, Maryland, Washington, and Massachusetts, all right, are on to this whole popular national vote campaign. A way to bypass it. It's, well, I'm sorry there, cryptic guys. It sounds like pure nonsense, doesn't it? But this is coming right down out of the state house and here in Massachusetts. All right? Now, this is, it is ridiculous. Well, it's going nowhere. It's already gone somewhere in five or six other states. This is, hey, look, I'll tell you, I agree with you that it's nonsense, but it's there. It is happening. Which means, basically here, let's face it, it doesn't matter how you're going to vote in the national election. And I think, personally, I think that news like this is exactly doing what it's intended to be. To tell you your vote don't count, go with it. Yeah, well, see, here's the whole thing, cryptic guys. All right, and this is what you got to understand about the Electoral College. When we vote in the national election, you are voting. Your vote is supposed to go to an elector. Okay, now the Electoral College people who are picked for that each year are picked by their representatives. You know, by the representatives in each of the districts here. Now, you know, according to the state's constitutions, they're supposed to go the way they're supposed to go. Alright, and if most of the votes in your state go, like here in this state, if you win seven, okay, if seven of the Electoral College votes are going towards candidate X, well, actually, the other five won't count, and candidate X will get all 12 of our votes. Now, in a couple other states, this is different. In Maine, it's different. If the vote is split, and I believe Maine's only got two votes to begin with, but the fact of the matter is, you know, each vote could go each way. Now, there was a measure defeated in California last year right along these lines, all right, because the California voters wanted to be able to split their Electoral College votes. But the fact of the matter is, all that's got to happen is have enough of the smaller states to do this, and it will completely ensure that whoever it is that wins the national vote is going to win all over. Now, I'll tell you something. This is, you know, it's heinous. It's absolutely positively heinous. And, you know, I advertise this heavily on Facebook tonight. I hope a lot of Massachusetts residents are listening in because we need to go in there and pound this thing back down. To be honest with you, this is going to be a tough nut to crack. It really will be, because I don't think that anybody's going to be able to even take this to the Supreme Court and do anything about it. Because what's happening here is on a statewide level. All right. Even though your electors, and I mean, you know, if you read the Constitution carefully, the electors that you send, okay, to the national convention to actually cast their votes, the sealed votes that are supposed to be opened and counted by the Senate, don't necessarily have to vote the way the people did. You know, at least that's the way I have read it, and it's an argument that's been made to me in the past. But the fact of the matter is, here now, it won't matter at all. It really won't matter at all. And I mean, folks, I'm sorry, but this is just plain heinous. You know, to think that you would be expected to go up and show up and vote and basically have your vote thrown the other way, you know, it's unbelievable. Now, a lot of people, of course, are reading the blogs that were out there on this, and there are some conservatives cheering this move, saying it would be great to see Sarah Palin you know, win the national election, and then all the libs would have to throw their votes towards her. But I personally, I don't know. Sarah Palin's neither here nor there. But let's face it, this is going to go the other way. All right, this is going to completely go the other way. And I mean, we've got a, you know, we got a lot of stuff coming on here. You know, on top of this, today, we got Obama urging the Senate to pass the campaign ad disclosure bill. Now, listen to this. This is down by William Douglas off of the McClatchy newspapers, which, by the way, usual disclaimer here, folks, all articles read on this program are for informational, educational, and discussion purposes only. President Barack Obama implored the Senate today to pass a campaign finance law that Republicans and business groups are attacking as political censorship in an effort to limit the number of ads aimed at Democrat incumbents in November elections. In a White House Rose Garden speech, Obama blasted GOP resistance to the Disclose Act, a measure that would impose strict campaign donation disclosure requirements on unions and corporations that sponsor political ads. And you'd think that reducing corporate and even foreign influence over our elections would not be a partisan issue. But of course, this is Washington 2010, Obama said, and the Republican leadership in the Senate is once again using every tactic and every maneuver they can to prevent the Disclose Act from even coming up for an up or down vote. Now, Senate Democrats said they intend to seek tomorrow to end the debate on the bill, authored by Senator Charles Chucky Schumer, who couldn't have guessed that, though they may not have the 60 votes they need to do so. Democrats crafted the Disclose Act after the Supreme Court's 5-4 decision in January that struck down decades-old laws barring corporations and unions from directly supporting campaigns. The case was Citizens United versus the Federal Election Commission. Now, the bill would require most independent groups, including labor unions and corporations, to disclose the names of the 5 top donors whose money helped fund political ads. It would also require corporate and union executives to appear in political ads that their organizations help pay for and state that he or she approves this message, as candidates currently do in campaign commercials. The bill would also prevent use of federal TARP money in elections and curb foreign nationals and countries from contributing to campaigns. Right. Republicans responded to Obama's criticism even before the president spoke, declaring statement after statement that the bill is unconstitutional and an obvious attempt to protect vulnerable congressional Democrats in November. The mere suggestion that a bill designed to save a politician's job should take precedent over helping millions of Americans find work is an embarrassing indictment of Democratic priorities, said Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. The Disclose Act seeks to protect unpopular Democrat politicians by silencing their critics and exempting their campaign supporters from an all-out attack on the First Amendment. Now, the House of Representatives passed its version of the bill, 219-206, last month, despite opposition from liberals over a disclosure exemption that was added to allay the National Rifle Association so it wouldn't pressure moderate Democrats to vote against the measure. Senate Democrats have modified their version of the bill, striking a union-friendly exemption but keeping the NRA carve-out in hopes of attracting Republican support, with little success so far. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce joined the Republican opposition Monday by unveiling an ad that will appear in Washington area publications Tuesday that declared, "Disclose is censorship, not democracy." The fact that this assault on the First Amendment is being considered as millions are desperately looking for work is a complete outrage, said Thomas Donahue, the business lobby's president. Despite their best efforts, there is no backroom dark enough, no partisan move strong enough, and no cynicism profound enough to barter away Americans' freedom of speech. Obama cited the nation's struggling economy as a primary reason to push forward with the Disclose Act. "At a time of such challenge for America, we can't afford these political games," he said. "Millions of Americans are struggling to get by, and their voices shouldn't be drowned out by millions of dollars in secret special interest advertising. The American people's voices should be heard." Now, folks, I'm going to come back next week, I hope, hopefully, and find a copy of this. I couldn't dig it out today. It just didn't seem to be available over on Thomas LOC Library of Congress, but I'm sure we're going to dig it up. Now, to me, to be honest with you, I don't understand why the Democrats will come up with something like this unless there's more to it than what you think. Now, obviously, there are some Republicans that have read this bill and are down on it because they think it's, well, hey, let's face it, it's, they're talking censorship. But why in hell would Obama want to have George Soros' hand shown all the way around the world here. You know, as hard as it is. I mean, George Soros, you know, this guy who funds all kinds of stuff, Media Matters, tons of other things out there. You know, tons of things going on in the Catholic Church, tons of stuff. I mean, George Soros is, of course, he financed Van Jones. He financed all kinds of people out there and has been financing stuff ever since, you know, doing it hard. Well, let's face it. I mean, with a Disclose Act, we would have to see that George Soros, you know, a foreign national, is actually doing his damnedest with his money to influence our elections. I don't know. We got to wait and see what's coming down the road here with this, folks. But I'll tell you something. The fact of the matter is that they are doing their damnedest to maintain power. And they're not going to be able to keep it. There's no way in hell are they going to be able to keep it with the Tea Party movements that are going on out there. You know, with the 828 movement that's coming up next month. And I'm hoping a lot of you are going to make it. I certainly am going to be there. Down in Washington, D.C., there are a lot of incumbents going to get tossed out. And they're going to be tossed out from both sides of the aisle here. Make no mistake about it. There are going to be quite a few Republicans and many, 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 many Democrats. Now, according to what I was looking at today, I think we need 40 seats in the House to take over the House, and we need 10 seats in the Senate. It is possible that we could pull this out here. Yes, it does. It reeks of desperation there, Natalie. There's no doubt about it. You know, and they do fear that they're going to come down big and hard. Now, there's going to be a few tough things that are coming along with this. And hopefully when they come in here, whoever it is doesn't go ahead and just do business as normal. You know, there are very, very important things we've got. Got to repeal this bill. That has got to go. That has got to get thrown by the wayside. We have got to get the federal government out of the healthcare business totally and entirely. Alright? I mean, I can understand the United States having a Department of Health, but they need to drop the human services right along behind all that. They need to do quite a bit. You know, and I mean, just look, I got no problem with them doing testing with the FDA and whatnot. You know, I could have more problems with that. It's something we can get into later on. But, you know, as far as them running our whole entire healthcare system, and I'm here to tell you something, folks, that there's more to this than what meets the eye. There was a much larger plan. I know a lot of you folks that watch the news out there today on a couple different channels saw Harry Reid campaigning out in Nevada. And he was out there with a hard left group. Turned around, told all of them that, you know, he wished we had a public option. And then Harry Reid turned around and said, there will be a public option. It's just a matter of when. Well, it's obvious. I mean, it should be obvious to everybody out there that that public option is the next step down the line. You know, those of you who listened in when I was recanting the bill before it got elected, when we went through this, through that bill line by line, you know, did 6 hours worth of shows on it, folks. You know, and I believe they are still up on the net here. Basically what we saw were four or five of the biggest insurance companies in this country taking over the health insurance system. And getting the force and power of government behind them and the IRS behind them to force you to basically do business with them. I mean, let's face it, you know, a big boon and a big move towards getting the insurance companies a monopoly. You know, to build a monopoly for the biggest insurance companies here. Wipe out all of the smallest ones. And how did they do this? Well, they threw them a bone. There was a huge bone in there that said, hey, any of the qualified health benefit providers who have followed all of the rules and still suffer a loss may have their losses reimbursed to them by the federal government. Now, that's kind of a, let's face it, that's a sure-ass thing. You know, if you are one of the big insurance companies, you are going to pull for this. And, of course, a lot of them did. Because, let's face it, they are going to gain a monopoly on the system there that it's unstoppable. And they will have the power and force of government behind them. So what does all this mean? Well, I'll tell you what it means. It means basically that once these, that four of five of the big insurance companies out there will be building their own huge healthcare system. Okay? There will be a medical records tracking system. We're all going to get thrown into one huge national database as far as your medical records go. There will be one huge all-encompassing health insurance exchange that anybody's going to be able to go to, and everybody will be forced to go to at some point in time in order to obtain the mandatory health insurance. And yes, mandatory health insurance. You do not pay, you do not buy health insurance, you will be forced to pay or purchase it. You fail to purchase it, you will be fined. You fail to pay the fine, you will be going to jail. That is all in the bill, Phil. Folks, we heard it right here. Now, Where am I going with this? Well, let me tell you something. 4 or 5 years down the road, I promise you, once this gets enacted, once those 4 or 5 big companies have taken over, and they are demanded, they must treat everybody that shows up, no pre-existing conditions, allowed to be turned away, they can't drop you for any reason whatsoever, they will be forced into a position of losses. There is no doubt about it. Now, right now, hey, you know, these losses are going to be reimbursed by the federal government. Well, how long do you think the federal government is going to continue to reimburse them for losses before they put an amendment into this bill that basically takes the whole system away from them? Especially after they have built a viable, basically a single-payer system. I mean, let's face it, that's what's going on here. The Democrats have set it up so that these health insurance companies are going to be building them a health insurance system. That's what's going on here. You know, make no mistake about it. Thank you. And what's going to happen down the line? Guarantee it. Positively, absolutely guarantee it. And we're already making moves in that direction. Now, we had a few things that are happening. Oh, none of this is going to happen until 2014. Well, that's not really true, is it? Okay, we heard that are ear rapers. Well, the act of Congress has already come across here, isn't it? What did we have there, about a month ago? 6 weeks? Obama came out and said, well, that's it. Insurance companies must cover children up to age 25. Well, what was the result of that? Oh, yeah. Everybody got their kids that were on their health insurance policy now covered up until they were 25. What else happened? Everybody's rates went up, didn't they? And, of course, those rates going up is just making a better case to have this bill, you know, because then the rates will not be able to be going up, will they? No. Who are they trying to kid? You know, let's face it, folks. This is going to have to be a pay-as-you-go kind of thing. They're not going to be able to pull off the magic of printing money out of thin air for this. They're not going to be able to do it. It's just no way in hell. You know, fact of the matter is, this is going to have to be a pay-as-you-go thing along the line here. You're not going to be able to borrow against this system or borrow to put into this system for very long at all. I mean, it's just not going to happen, you know. Yeah, they have done it before, Aleph, but the fact of the matter is, okay, they have always pulled it off before because there was a promise of some economic boom that was going to come along and help pay whatever securities they were selling to finance these events. You know, they've only engaged in quantitative easing here a couple of times, you know, at least that, you know, over the last year that we know about. You know, but they're not going to be able to get involved with quantitative easing or any of the other things, any of the other usual maneuvers here when it comes to this healthcare thing. Because this is a direct service that is going to come with a very direct and very exact bill. And that bill is going to have to show, we're going to have to show how we pay that bill each and every year if we're going to maintain any kind of standards or ratings for our bonds. You know? It's, what makes you think they care? They don't care, Aleph. They really don't care. What they're out for here is control. You know, what they are out here to do is obviously control you. I mean, look at everything else that's coming down the road. I mean, we've already got Michelle Obama trying to, you know, institute an obesity index. You know, we've got New York City trying to tell people they can't sell trans fats. You know, we've got all kinds of stuff coming down the road. Look at all the anti-smoking laws that are being passed out there. You know, everywhere you look, people are going to tell you that because, and this is the honest to God's truth, you already got the liberals here, and this state of Massachusetts acting this way. You know, well, since we're all paying for your health care, you're going to have to do your best to try to stay healthy. You know? Now, that's what they're going to say on top of it, to try to make it simple. But what does that mean? Well, that means you can't smoke, you can't drink, you can't eat anything but macrobiotic. You can't eat anything that isn't approved. And, of course, if people continue to eat this, what will be the next thing? Well, where will they go? Well, they'll go to where these things are sold and tell them that, hey, under the Uniform Commercial Code, we're going to be able to tell you what you can and cannot sell. You know? This is where it's coming down the road here. There is no doubt about it. You know? They probably will. It would be something there, yeah? Hey, half of them are, you know, morbidly obese. There's no doubt about it. You know, you ever see so many slobs up in there in Congress? It's unbelievable. All right, at any rate, folks, we're at the bottom of the hour here, and I've got to take a short break. It's folks, you're listening to the Politics Cafe at www.herncode.com. I'm your host. My name is Mark Belcher, and I will be back in about 2 minutes here. Pay attention to Bob. He's got a few things coming down the road there, folks. Take a peek over to the website, www.hernco.com. We'll be back.
All right, this next question is for Caroline. Caroline, if you take the bus 60 miles to school at 5:30 a.m. and the bus is traveling at an average of 30 miles per hour, how are you going to get to your prenatal appointment and still make it to homeroom on time?
Some students are tackling more than just their schoolwork, which is why more than 30% of them aren't graduating. But you can give them the boost they need to make it through by visiting boostup.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through.
Do your part by going to boostup.org and giving a student the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called InventNow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. Then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's
great. Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
And we're back. You're listening to the Politics Cafe. It's www.herncoat.com, the best in internet talk radio. All right. Yeah, folks, I'll tell you, this whole election nonsense definitely got my spine up in hackles. No doubt about it. I mean, it's just insane. You know, of course, on top of this, and I'm sure you guys have all heard about the WikiLeaks, but I did a little digging around because I wanted to see if I could find something different, maybe a little more in-depth. And over at the AtlanticWire.com, we got the five biggest revelations of the WikiLeaks document. Now, WikiLeaks founder here, Julian Assange, isn't giving away his source. And he's refusing to do it. He's just not going to do it. And I'll tell you something. The Obama administration had best not press this guy. The worst thing in the world that you could do with somebody like this is make a martyr out of him for his cause. Because the rest of it will blow up in his face. Although, personally, I hope they do. I mean, they are dumb enough to do this. But we will see what happens down the road here. At any rate, what we got here is a list of the five top biggest revelations of the WikiLeaks documents. Now, some of this is kind of funny, okay? Pakistani intelligence possibly aiding the Taliban. Americans fighting the war in Afghanistan have long harbored strong suspicions that Pakistan's military spy service has guided the Afghan insurgency with a hidden hand, even as Pakistan receives more than $1 billion a year from Washington for its help combating the militants, according to a trove of secret military field reports made public Sunday. The Pakistani Inner Services Intelligence, the ISI, is said to be involved in a network of Pakistani assets and collaborators that run from the Pakistani travel belt along the Afghan border through southern Afghanistan and all the way to the capital, Kabul. The network may be working with the Taliban in secret strategy sessions to organize networks of militant groups that fight against American soldiers in Afghanistan and even hatch plots to assassinate Afghan leaders. Now, folks, this is not new. This is not a revealed secret, okay? We have known for years that the ISI, Pakistan's intelligence service, has indeed and in fact been the ones that funded, founded, and started up the Taliban. Yeah, make no mistake about it. about this? This is old news out, and everybody's all upset about it. I don't know. I cannot say. Now, next one coming down here, I think that this is just... This has got to be... what's the word I'm looking for? It's got to be propaganda. There's no doubt about this. Okay, and exactly what it's meant to do, let's discover this here. Now, Der Spiegel reports that the secret memos reveal the drawbacks of a weapon that has been lauded by the U.S. military as a panacea, a view shared by the president. What he's talking about here are the drones. In his short time in office, Barack Obama has unleashed double the number of drone missions ordered by his seemingly trigger-happy predecessor, George W. Bush. But they are not always reliable. According to our drones have crashed while on combat missions in both Afghanistan and Iraq. Each drone crash necessitates elaborate and dangerous salvage operations. Well, let's face it here, folks, okay? You know, there's something going on here with this. This is kind of like, you look at something like this and it's just trying to say, what are you doing? Telling the enemy that the drone is easy to shoot down? Are you telling the enemy that the drone is something not to be worried about? You know, look, you're going to have all kinds of accidents going on with any kind of pieces of mechanical business that are going on out there that are built by human beings. You know, it happens. It's, I just think it's funnier than hell, to be honest with you. Okay, now, 30 years later, the Taliban still have Stingers. This is number 3 on the list. Well, yeah, okay. No kidding. We gave them the damn Stingers. During the anti-Soviet Afghan War of the 1980s, the U.S. helped the Afghan insurgents secure Stinger missiles. Now, after the Soviet military withdrew, and during the Civil War of the 1990s, when the Taliban first emerged, the U.S. attempted to recover all of the missiles. But, the New York Times reports, the Taliban have used portable heat-seeking missiles against Allied aircraft, a fact that has not been publicly disclosed by the military. Come on, give me a break here. What do you mean there ain't none of them over there, and that none of us know that they've been coming down? Look, people out there, alright, have been dying over there. Okay, a lot of these have been airmen, a lot of them have been shot down, a lot of helicopters and whatnot shot down. Of course that's what they're using. You know, let's give it up. Now, U.S. and Afghan officials covering up civilian deaths. Now, the Atlantic's Mark Armbinder finds at least 144 separate incidents of civilian casualties and subsequent cover-ups. He writes, the failed special forces attempt to kill Abu Layth al-Libi, which resulted in the deaths of civilians, suggests the willingness of some professional governors to collude with the official storyline. Or provisional governors, I'm sorry. There was a reference to a CIA paramilitary operative shooting at 30 yards, a blind one. Something that was now many, many more civilians. All right, that's the way wars are won. Okay, how do we end up really winning? You started taking out enough civilians that they just knew damn well that there was no way in hell they were going to stop us. They had to capitulate. All right, same thing happened in Germany. All right, let's face it. I'm sorry. Do I like to think about things like this? Am I condoning this? Well, I'm condoning winning the goddamn war. That is for sure. Let's make no doubt about that. Okay, and now here's the last one, okay, and this is just simply foolish and hilarious. Bin Laden is matchmaking for insurgents. Now, The Guardian reports insurgents reportedly given Arab wife by Bin Laden for his explosive exploits. The original military report reads, so-called Abdullah is the brother of Kari Najimullah and is married to an Arab. His wife was a present by Osama bin Laden because Abdullah is an infamous specialist for radio-controlled IEDs. You gotta love it. You just gotta love it. All right, now also we got a hand up in the room here. Mr. Bilal, UK, from Manchester. Welcome to the mic. Let you know that you are on a worldwide radio broadcast. So please try to keep this as adult as you can. So what's your question or comment there, my friend?
How you're doing? Can everyone hear me? Can I have a bone? Hi. In response to the last person on the phone, on the mic, I don't know your name, but you were talking about how You can win the war by killing Afghanis. I'm Afghani myself. And basically, mentality. Our mentality is that doesn't matter how many of you kill us, because we've got the mentality that we're going to go to heaven. So you can continue to kill us. We're either going to fight till the last man, or we're going to give up, and giving up is not an option.
Well, I can appreciate that sentiment. I can appreciate that 100%, no doubt about it. You know, and like I say, I'm not going to sit here and condone the killing of civilians altogether. But I will tell you that that's, you know, the rules of engagement as we're faced with over there right now. You know, it's sick. I mean, basically and let me explain something else to you here on top of this. All right, number one, most of the Taliban that are in your country are not Afghani. All right, let's make that point perfectly clear. Okay, for the most part, these people are exiled Arabs. Okay, and a few Pakistanis, and many of the Pakistani population are former Arabs. Make no doubt about it. Now, I had held a few interviews with folks from the Northern Alliance way back when we first got started in this mess, back in 2001, 2002, and I will tell you something, that there was much, I'm not going to call it racism, but there was definitely an ethnic tinge to everything that went on over there. Now, the person that I had interviewed over there was a Uyghur. Okay, now I'm not sure which ethnic group you belong to there, or whether you claim any affiliation with any of them. But, he was, at the time, all of the ethnic groups were basically getting along. The Pashtun were the biggest one there. But there were the Uyghurs, there were the Uzbeks, two or three others. The fact of the matter is, any of them that I had talked to, when they had successfully done something against the Taliban, they had said that they had either defeated Arabs or they had chased Arabs away each and every time. They didn't call them Taliban. They didn't call them Afghani leaders. They didn't call them insurgents. They didn't call them mullahs or clerics or anything else. They called them Arabs each and every time. Okay? Yeah. Most Afghanis are definitely Pashtun. I think it's 80% of the country there. My buddy Pox is writing into the room. But the Uyghurs, the Uzbeks, and a few others. And like I said, there's one guy that I was talking to was a Uyghur. All right, Sarge, you had your hand up there for a minute and wanted to say something. My old buddy Sarge from the Extreme Court that used to broadcast here off of Herncoat.com is in the room. Sarge, if you want to definitely add your two cents here, I'd love to hear it. You know, put your hand back up and we'll throw it in. If not, I can move up and move onward here. Okay, bye-bye, because if not, I got a good one here for everybody else. And now this is something that the conservatives out here may find a little, they're not too sure, you know, because we have been going balls to the wall with closing the borders. I mean, let's face it, we have been all over the fact that we're trying to do our damnedest to get the border closed, you know, to do something about the illegal immigration problem. Now, believe it or not, okay, on this record, Obama is not doing so bad. All right, not that I would want to give this guy any praise for anything, but you got to give credit where credit's due, okay? Illegal deportations have doubled, you know, in his first year of office. Make no mistake about it. They actually have gone right up. They have doubled. And now on top of this, okay, the federal government is doing something else. All right, but Sarge, I'll get into this, but I definitely want to hear what you got to say first.
Okay, I'm going to make a comment that I made earlier today in Pal Talk Radio. And that relates to the rules of engagement. Rules of engagement did not come about until after the Korean conflict. Anyone can go through the Geneva Convention and they will not find anything relating to the so-called rules of engagement. Nothing. There is nothing in the Geneva Convention that outlines the so-called rules of engagement. Now, the rules of engagement that are in force today came about during the Vietnam conflict and were brought about by people like J. William Fulbright and others. There is no legal basis in the Geneva Convention or the Hague Convention for rules of engagement. Now, I'm sorry, but anyone who believes in these daggone things are out of their flipping mind. Rules of engagement get soldiers, sailors, Marines, and airmen killed. Period. If you're being shot at from a house, you don't have time to look in that house first and find out if there's civilians in there. You don't. You return fire, and you return it in a massive amount of firepower. It's that simple. Right, Mark, you blow up the whole bloody house. Hello, Bumbledore. You don't wait to see if there's innocents in the house. Because terrorists do not care about civilians. They care only about being able to kill Americans. That's all they care about. Now, we need to start fighting our wars against these scum the very same way they fight against us. Bring them down. If there's civilians in the house, guess what? 9 out of 10 times, those civilians are sympathetic to the terrorists. You destroy the enemy. You don't play around. That's war, people. Collateral damage is not something new. Look at Dresden, Hiroshima, Nagasaki. Civilian casualties happen in a war. Back to you, Mark.
All right, thanks, Sarge. I mean, that's exactly where he's... Sarge has hit the nail right on the head there. You know, if you are going to win this war, you have got to subdue the entire population. You know, and then you bring them back. I mean, that's how it works. You know, I mean, take a look at the Japanese, and I've used this often before. You know, there's no mistake about it. Hey, don't get me wrong here, okay? You know, 80% of the people in Japan weren't for the war. But the Japanese were still some of the bloodiest butchers in the world. When they went through China, they killed 20 million people in China, you know, and in Southeast Asia as they went along and took over place after place after place. You know, the only way they were going to go down is when the popular outcry was, hey, you know, the innocents are now dying. It's time for the leadership to stop the war. There was no other way around it. Same thing happened in Germany, you know. Most of the people in Germany weren't really Nazis. But look at all the carnage that the Nazis reaped. You know, most of the people in Soviet Russia weren't bloodthirsty butchers. But look at what Stalin did. You know, look at what actually was what occurred by a minority of these people. Now, granted, it took a lot more to bring it down. You know, same thing happened in China. You know, most Chinese people that you meet are some of the most wonderful people in the world. They're fun. You know, 80-90% of them. But let's face it, you know, they went through 70 million people before they, you know, they became communists. 70 million lives, you know. That is the way they fight. That is, and that's how they won, you know. Make no mistake about it, you know. What it took for us to fight back was another story. You know, you've got to completely subdue these people and then bring them back. Like I started to say there, with Japan, it's exactly what we did. You know, after... after we completely subdued Japan, after we sent businessmen in there to teach the Japanese how to bring themselves about, you know, to resurrect their country, to rebuild Japan and make it what it is today, you know? And, I mean, things are happening this way, you know? I mean, you know, a lot of people are taking a look at what's going on over in Palestine and saying, oh, my God, you know, the news shows you, you know, all the houses that are being bulldozed. And they show you the people that are living in the mud huts and blah, 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 blah. But look at some of the things they don't show you. You know, on the Gaza Strip, they just opened a new shopping mall. It's huge, you know. And you take a look in there, and other than the obvious ethnicity of the people, you really wouldn't be able to tell them from anybody else. They're all dressed Western, you know. Bright, well-lit, very clean shopping mall. Tons of people in there going right through it and shopping, you know. This is part of the road to recovery here. That's what it's all about, you know. You get people engaged in trade. You get them engaged in business. You get them to where they become productive for themselves, okay? And they will cast their collectivist ways behind them. And that's really what it's all about. All right, now listen, I opened up here with talking about the illegal immigrants coming in here and how Obama may seem to be doing his job and might be making a little motions in the right direction. Well, this is actually another one's going on here. This by Ivan Moreno down off the Associated Press just a little while before the show started tonight. The federal government is rapidly expanding a program to identify illegal immigrants using fingerprints from arrests, drawing opposition from local authorities and advocates who argue the initiative amounts to an excessive dragnet. I don't have a problem with an excessive dragnet. I'm sorry. The program has gotten less attention than Arizona's new immigration law, but it may end up having a bigger impact because of its potential to round up and de-grince nationwide. The San Francisco sheriff wanted nothing to do with the program, and the city council in Washington, D.C. blocked use of the fingerprint program in the nation's capital. Now, Colorado is the latest to debate the program called Secure Communities, and immigrant groups have begun to speak up, telling the governor in a letter last week that the initiative will make crime victims reluctant to cooperate with police due to fear of being drawn into an immigration regime. Now, under the program, the fingerprints of everyone who is booked into a jail for any crime are run against FBI criminal history records and Department of Homeland Security immigration records to determine who is in the country illegally and whether they've been arrested previously. Most jurisdictions are not included in the program, but Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, has been expanding the initiative. Since 2007, 467 jurisdictions in 26 states have joined. ICE says it plans to have it in every jail in the country by 2013. Secure Communities is currently being phased into the places where the government sees as having the greatest need for it based on population estimates of illegal immigrants and crime statistics. Now, since everyone arrested would be screened, the program could easily deport more people than Arizona's new law, said Sunita Patel, an attorney who filed a lawsuit in New York against the federal government on behalf of a group worried about the program. Patel said that because illegal immigrants could be referred to ICE at the point of arrest, even before a conviction, the program can create an incentive for profiling and create a pipeline to deport more people. It has the potential to revolutionize immigration enforcement, said Patel. Now, this article goes on and on. We're going to have to get into the rest of it. But it is good to know that they are actually working on something there, that ICE is starting to get a little better coordinated with local police, the fingerprint thing. I kind of like it, you know. And by the way, those of you out there who have been protesting Arizona, you know, especially people up here in the Northeast were telling me, I'm not buying anything made in Arizona. Well, I know you're not. You're not going to buy anything made in Arizona anyway because they make very little there. They get shipped around the country. But the fact of the matter is, here in Massachusetts, okay, we have been engaged in something quite similar to this for quite some time. Alright, now they have not been on a roundup kind of thing, but illegal immigrants who get pulled over for traffic violations, who get picked up, who run into contact with the police for whatever reason, alright, are picked up by the state police and delivered to ICE, alright, immediately. You know, before, you know, immediately upon any arrest that goes on here, you know, and that's something that actually came into being under Mitt Romney here. It was, you know, this is not news. It's not a new thing. I've actually been engaged in this for quite some time. Hey, that's right. They get pulled over for a traffic violation, what have you. You can't prove your immigration status. You know, what they used to do was sit there, they would call for ICE and wait for ICE to show up. And more often than not, ICE would not show up. You wouldn't hear from him, and they'd end up, you know, letting him go or holding him overnight and letting him go or, you know, waiting for somebody to come in and pay his bail. But now, the state police in the state are authorized to pick them up and deliver them to ICE. So that's actually been going on for quite some time here. All right, now, Chris, I'm running out of time here, and I do believe we have got something else in the stack of stuff somewhere deep buried down in here. It might not be that important. At any rate, folks, I want you guys to all think, especially you folks here in Massachusetts, maybe worth your while to call your local representative tomorrow. Give them a buzz. Tell them what you think about this whole overriding the National Vote Act. You know, this is just, you know, unbelievable. The National Popular Vote Movement. I'm here to tell you that this is one of the most heinous things that I have ever heard of in my life. You know, and I had really, you know, could not imagine a way that they were going to work their way around, turn this country into a pure and open democracy, which is something the founding fathers never wanted. You know, you guys got to understand that the Electoral College was founded so that large population centers would not control the elections for the whole country. It was to give some say, all right, it was to give some measure of democracy to, everybody in the country, you know, especially to all of the rural areas. I mean, you gotta look at it this way, okay? Where are your huge population centers? I mean, face it, based around New York, and in California. You know, maybe a couple other places in between. But if these population centers are gonna be able to control who the president of this country is, you know, and your vote is going to get thrown away, I'm sorry. But there's just something heinous going on there that is just totally, totally wrong. And it is something that we cannot abide by. And like I say, this is something that we're going to have to solve on the state level. I don't believe at this point in time, Sarge, you can correct me if you think I'm wrong here, but I can't see where they're even going to be able to take this to the U.S. Supreme Court. I just cannot see where SCOTUS is even going to have a say in this. Anybody tries to take this to the Supreme Court, I believe the Supreme Court's going to turn around and tell them, no, that's a state thing, you got to take it back to your state. But Sarge, you got your hand up. Tell me something. What's your take on this whole mess?
The Supreme Court won't touch it because the Constitution basically allowed the state to establish their own procedures. It's not a constitutionally challengeable statute. And these people who are pushing it know that. They know it is not challengeable under the Constitution because the Constitution does state that the state shall control the manner of the counting of the Electoral College. Therefore, ipso facto, that's why they're doing it, because they know that it cannot be challenged in the federal court system.
Now, that was my take on it exactly. You know, there's just no way. Yeah, they're not going to be able to turn around and do a damn thing about this thing. They will just throw it right back into the state court and say, hey, that's a problem in your state. We don't have control over that. You know, and let's face it, the states' rights things are coming about more and more and more on a daily basis. I mean, I'll tell you something. To be honest with you, I think you're going to see this health care law challenged in the Supreme Court at some point. I think you're going to see these financial laws. Well, that's another whole story for another night. You know, the Financial Reform Act that went through there a few weeks ago, which I'm still reeling from. I can't get over. And I'm going to be honest with you, I can't explain a couple of things here. Didn't want to bring it up, but I'm definitely going to bring up a few queries and a few things to think about. All right, that Financial Reform Act basically put the economy of this country into the hands of a few unelected officials. Any way you look at it, you know, the too big to fail thing. Once they get too big, they may be broken up by the federal government. Once they hit a certain level, they're going to totally come under scrutiny. Financial products that hit the marketplace are going to be coming under scrutiny. And, now to me, I could just see, look, what they're going to do here. I mean, where do you hide a tree? You know, let's face it, in a forest. If you've got a financial product out there, do you think people are not going to be able capital refusing, you're going to make a ton of money.
Think it's going to be, coming under the scrutiny of these people? Or are you just going to bring it out all by itself and tout it? Hell no, you're going to bring out 200 different ones, you know, and let people find the one that does the best for them, and let this bureaucracy get themselves tied up forever, you know, searching through all the morass here to try to find their way to the one that's actually doing the damage, you know. So I don't think it's going to work. You know, I really don't. Plus the fact that I just don't like the idea of, you know, it's just such a fascist control of your economy, you know, being pulled off here. But once again, it's going to be a very, very, very tough one here. Uniform commercial code laws have rarely, if ever, been found unconstitutional. You know, they can basically do what they want there. And I'm sure that when this is all comes down and said and done, that's where it's going to fall, is under the UCC. You know, not pretty, folks. Not very pretty at all. Something else is, you know, like I say, it's going to remain to be seen. It's one of those kind of things that I hate to say it, but the negative effects of this, until they become totally apparent, won't be until it's too late. Won't be able to do anything about it. So that's going to be the tough part. All right, but with that, I've got to do a few things here about closing up the cafe for tonight. You know, once again, immunity is running all around the place, getting everything locked up, getting things finished. The tables are getting piled high with the chairs, and the lights are growing dim. So, as always, the cafe comes to a close at about this time each week, but as always, the bar will be open. Yes, Politics Lobby 4, Patriots Unite Voice Room here on Pal Talk will be opened up. So if folks want to hang out, have a beer or two, first round is always on me. And I want to say thanks a lot to everybody for coming in tonight. Your appearance has been appreciated. And thank you for listening. And we will be back here next week, getting ready. See if we can't have a few things put together for next week about heading down to the 828. Revival that's going on in Washington, D.C., which I really cannot wait for. I want to have a few more reports, hopefully. I'm starting to look through out there. Some of the libs are actually really rallying or getting their own rallies together to protest this whole thing. And I think that what's going to be going on here at 828 is going to be one of the biggest events this country has ever seen. I really believe that. You know, and I thought that last year at 9/12 when I was down there for the Tea Party. And that Tea Party was huge, despite what anybody says about it. There were people jammed from Capitol Hill all the way down that one big wide avenue that went all the way to the Washington Monument. And I mean, it was packed, you know. If you had asked me, I would have said there was easily a million people there. Maybe more. But this time, I think on this 828 one, I think it's going to be even bigger. And I think that it's not going to be put off lightly, because who's hosting it? It's Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck is turning into one of the most hated people by the left. And I love it. Not that I totally agree with everything that Glenn Beck says, because he does get a few things wrong every now and then. There's make no mistake about it. But his head's definitely in the right place. He's definitely got the idea of liberty. Understands what liberty is all about. Understands how this country was founded, how this country was formed, and where this country should be going, you know, and who should be guiding us there. And that is us. We should be guiding ourselves forward here, you know, not the government. You know, never forget that government was here to secure the blessings of liberty for us and our prosperity, you know, to ensure domestic tranquility. It's all it's for, you know, to protect us from outside affairs. That's all it was ever formed for. The rest of this, we can all battle on our own. That's why the 9th and 10th Amendments are there. So that anything else we want to do, we could do on a state level, and we can fight each other right in our own states. You know, but as far as, you know, bringing this all out the national level, the way they've been doing every damn thing, with the economy, with health care, you know, with cap and trade, which is coming down the road here before too long. I'm sorry, it's extraneous, and it's beyond the purview and beyond the charter of the U.S. federal government. All right, folks. Once again, good night from the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com, the best in internet talk radio. Folks, don't forget all the other good shows that are over on Hernco, and I tune in over there. There's always some good stuff. There's usually some good music going there playing in the background if you want to have something on while you're you know, working away at your computer and whatnot. Real good jazz. All right, folks, we'll talk to you later. I'm babbling here. We'll see you next week. Good night from the Politics Cafe.